seated, please. Court is ready to hear argument in cause number 051023, Montgomery County, Texas, versus David Park.
May it please the court. Again, I'm John Hightower. I'm with the Houston law firm of Olson & Olson, and I represent the petitioner in Montgomery County. This is a whistleblower case, as the court knows, and it was brought by a lieutenant in the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department, a man named David Park. In 2002, which is the time frame in which the events giving rise to the lawsuit arose, David Park was the patrol lieutenant in the Sheriff's Department. That meant his principal duties were supervising deputies who were performing the patrol function. He also, however, had the ancillary responsibility of coordinating security for the county convention center. And the arrangements were the county convention center required that when someone was putting on a private event there that they had to hire uniformed off-duty police officers to provide security. And it was David Park's responsibility to connect up these parties that needed security with officers who were willing to work security at the convention center. It was undisputed in the case that Park received no additional benefits for performing this function, didn't get any extra pay, didn't get any benefits of any kind from doing it. He did the job during his regular hours as a patrol lieutenant, just an extra duty in addition to everything else that he did.
But do you think additional pay, I mean, would you tie the test to hurting you compensation-wise?
Certainly a reduction in compensation. Let's say the county cut his salary significantly.
But is that the sine qua non? You can never have a whistleblower claim unless salary's cut.
Of course not. You can certainly have a lot of things other than a cut in salary. But that certainly, salary isn't.
But what other things? I mean, you would say it has to be tangible. Salary, benefits. You wouldn't. I could put you over there working at, scrubbing floors at the same pay and benefits, but you would say that's not an adverse personnel decision.
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that. You would have to look at the circumstances. Certainly, moving one person from a 8 to 5 shift to a midnight to 7 a.m. or midnight to 8 a.m. might be a great hardship based on their personal circumstances. To another person, makes no difference to them.
So you'd Is it an objective or subjective test?
I would submit to the court that it needs to be an objective test. There's very little guidance from the courts of appeals as to what a plaintiff has to show in order to prove an adverse personnel action under the Whistleblowers Act. As we pointed out to the court, the United States Supreme Court has recently developed a test under Title VII with a similar retaliation claim, and they've required that the adverse action be both materially adverse to the person, to the claimant, and also be measured based on an objective standard. So someone,
and that being the case, and I think the standard is a reasonable employee would have found the challenged action materially adverse. Is that not inherently a fact question?
I think the answer to that is no. Yes, it can be a fact question, and I gave you an example, like a change in shifts. In this particular case is an example of why it doesn't have to be, why it's not inherently a fact issue, or it is a fact issue that may be resolved in summary judgment as it was here. The plaintiff's argument here, again, this case comes to this court on summary judgment. And the plaintiff's argument here was that what he lost, and the only argument he made, was that what he lost was the right to earn extra income from working extra jobs. And I don't know whether the court is familiar. It's a very common practice with police officers to work extra jobs as police officers in uniform, providing security, very common in police departments. And the plaintiff's argument was, hey, because I had this in the security coordinator function, I could assign myself the jobs. I lost the opportunity to do that when the county took that position, that function, and gave it to another department instead of the sheriff's department. That might be enough, but that's not the facts established by the summary judgment motion. What the summary judgment evidence established was that he did not lose the right to work extra jobs at the convention center or anywhere else.
Yeah, but you would presume, and I don't know what the record will bear out, but that someone who has the power and the authority to confer additional money on your fellow officers would occupy a position of some prestige within the department, and he certainly lost that.
And that might have been an argument that he could have made in response to the motion for summary judgment, but he did not. The only county took the position. He hasn't shown an adverse personnel action in the motion for summary judgment. It was incumbent upon him to say, okay, yes, I did suffer negative consequences because of the action that was taken, and to set out those negative consequences. He did that. Only one consequence. He didn't say it was a high prestige job. He didn't say he lost prestige, lost status. He said only, gosh, I could pick and choose jobs at the convention center when I had that position, and I can't do that anymore.
But isn't the message that is then sent, if you see sexual harassment going on in the workplace, you better not report it, because they're going to jerk some other duties away from you.
No, I think the message that's sent is there is no action that an employer could take that won't result in a lawsuit. If once an employee has made some kind of claim, they then are in this privileged status where you can't make any changes with regard to their position without negotiating with them, going and say, gosh, is it okay if we change the color of the paint in your office? Is that okay with you? And that's the problem that having such a low standard, such a low threshold, basically the absence of a standard in Texas, is there is no action an employer can take that is risk-free once an employee has blown the whistle.
Does it matter then in the situation here, Commissioner Reinhart had, I guess he was responsible for making the assignments to the convention center?
Actually, the allegations, and they have to be taken as true because it's summary judgment, was that Reinhart basically went to the director of the convention center, who actually makes that decision, and persuaded him to make this change because he wanted to get back at David Park for having made a complaint.
Right. Was the convention center within the commissioner's precinct, I guess? It's
a countywide facility. He had no authority. I don't think there's any allegation that he had authority to go make that change.
Is it a county-owned facility?
It's a county-owned facility. Certainly, commissioner's court as a group would have authority over it, but an individual commissioner.
But the events where the officers provided private security were private events, kind of, I guess, leasing space from the county?
Private events at a public facility, yes. So they weren't getting paid by the county. They got paid by the private participants in the event.
Is there any evidence along the lines that a reasonable employee would consider transferring the security coordination duty to be punishment?
There's certainly the only argument that the plaintiff presented in response to the county's argument that there wasn't an adverse personnel action is, hey, I lost the ability to assign myself jobs at the convention center, even though I rarely did so. I lost that ability, and therefore I lost my compensation was reduced. However, the plaintiff conceded that jobs like that, extra duty jobs for police officers in Montgomery County, are plentiful, and that as far as he knows, he could get all the jobs that he wanted. So he himself refuted the argument, the summary judgment evidence refuted the argument that he lost compensation. He didn't lose any compensation. He didn't argue that he lost status. He didn't argue that there was some other incident of this position that...
And if he had argued that, then summary judgment would be inappropriate.
If he had argued that, and if it was a significant... He identified a material negative effect on himself, then yes, summary judgment would have been inappropriate. But he needed it to be material. First of all, he needed to point out something other than compensation, since compensation does not work for him. His compensation wasn't reduced. He needed to point something out. He needed to show that it had a negative effect on him, that negative effect was material, not just some small thing, but a material one, and it had to be judged from an objective standard. He couldn't just say, well, I really liked having a blue office, and they came in and painted my office orange just to get even with me.
Implied in your argument is that this was off-duty work. Would there be anything, could there be any adverse personnel action ever if what it affected was solely off-duty circumstances one way or another?
I don't think the court has to reach that question, but I'm not sure I know the answer. But their argument is that if They did take away his right to work extra jobs. They're taking away taking money out of his pocket. If it's common to do that for police officers in general, then that's a adverse personnel action. I think that would at least raise a fact issue. If that were the case here, he would at least be, I think, probably be entitled to have a jury decide that for him. That was the case was originally briefed under there was a case out of the Fifth Circuit applying the Whistleblower Act, applying the ultimate employment decision standard, which the United States Supreme Court has now rejected in favor of the less stringent standard of materiality and viewed on an objective standard. But I think in that case that maybe there would be a fact issue. But that's not the case we have here, because the testimony summary judgment evidence conclusively showed that he did not lose the right to work extra jobs either at the convention center or anywhere else.
Under the argument you advance here, would you say that a commissioner like Reinhart here could be subjectively motivated to retaliate against Park here, but there is no, there's still no cause of action under the Whistleblower Act?
I think you could, yes.
Does that undermine one of the purposes of the Whistleblower Act, and that is to secure lawful conduct of public servants?
What you've got a balance here. You've got a balance between that very important purpose behind the Act and the necessity of public employers to be able to manage their employees. And if you elevate the most picayune and minor condition of employment, you don't apply a materiality test, and you elevate the most minor condition of employment to something that's going to have to be resolved by the courts, you're hamstringing public employers. You got to understand, in public employers, everything they do is subject to the law. Their employees have many opportunities to blow the whistle, and it doesn't have to be, of course, it doesn't have to be legitimate. There doesn't have to actually have been a violation of the law. Only the employee believes there's a violation of the law. And if you adopt the no standard, what you're telling public employers is anytime a whistle, there's a potential that the whistle's been blown, that you need to treat that employee different than you treat any other employee, that you can't make any change, no matter how minor, without risking a whistleblower's lawsuit.
Do you think the are you familiar with the Click case out of the Fifth Circuit, the transfer from to guard duty in prison, Click versus Copeland?
Yeah, I'm not sure, Your Honor. Sorry.
Okay. You know, what's minor to one person may be significant to the other, and I understand the balancing test, and I guess it's, I'm having some difficulty with that, irrespective of what the allegation may be. At some point, I think that the person who has, the employee that has, for whatever reason, decided to come forth with what he or she perceives to be some evidence of a bad act, as I understand this whistleblower statute, they need some protection from any type of change in their life. But I know it has to be more than an allegation, so I'm wrestling with, you know, where's this test? And I know you suggest it should be a high test, and perhaps it should be, but
I think you're suggesting, maybe I'm misunderstanding you, but that
I'm not suggesting anything. I want an answer.
I mean, it sounded like it was a subjective standard, which I certainly would think is not appropriate. What the Supreme Court has adopted is an objective standard. You don't look at this particular person and, boy, they say, I use the absurd example, I really like having my office walls painted blue, and they come in now and they've painted them orange.
What if they painted fuchsia? Would that be an objective test that we could apply? Or it's an Aggie and they painted orange.
If they painted an Aggie's office orange, they did something like that. I tried to give an example of, I just like blue. I don't dislike the color they painted my office. I just like blue.
Those are easy.
I mean, there have to be some changes in conditions that don't reach the level of materiality. Again, otherwise, every time you're dealing with the whistleblower, and we have 100,000 or more public employees in Texas, every time a public employer is dealing with the whistleblower, they have to treat them as if differently than any other employee they have. They can't make even the most minor change without risking being here where we are today.
It seems like it almost you're asking for a standard in a discrimination case, which hostile environment, those type of standards are very, very high thresholds.
Actually, I think the Supreme Court standard is fairly low threshold. And their standard is, the test is, would doing this to an average, a regular employee, based on objective standard, would that deter them from making this kind of complaint?
But if their perception is in a hostile environment, you've changed their wall, you've done something, that's a high threshold for a plaintiff to prove.
Counsel, I've just been reminded that the amicus has reserved 5 minutes, and
yes,
we're well beyond your time, so we'll hear from the amicus.
Thank you, I apologize for that. No problem.
May it please the court. I'm here on behalf of the Texas Association of School Boards Legal Assistance Fund, appearing as friend of the court in support of Montgomery County's petition for review. Our brief raises two issues of heightened concern to our member school districts. One is the point that Mr. Hightower was alluding to earlier, and that is that the Whistleblower Act's prohibition against employers taking adverse personnel action is construed in a way that the term adverse requires an objective materiality standard at least as rigorous as the objective materiality standard required by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Burlington Railroad case that's applicable in Title VII retaliation cases.
You just don't think there's any subjective component to it? Because I was wondering, we're all sitting here thinking, oh, gosh, it would be terrible to have to work the graveyard shift, but maybe somebody liked the graveyard shift. And so to get back at him, moved into the middle of the day.
I think that an objective test can look at those sorts of situations. We do have a body of federal jurisprudence that's grown up with Burlington as it stands, and the courts look at all the factors. And in certain circumstances, a graveyard shift may be very difficult on a mother with kids. In other circumstances, police officers have their shifts changed all the time, and they have to frequently work graveyard shifts, and so that's a common expectation in the job.
Well, let me ask you about: are you familiar with Click versus Copeland?
The name of the case is very familiar,
Your Honor. It's a case where the sheriff deputy sued because he was transferred from duty in the law enforcement section to duty as a jail guard, and they considered that to be an inferior position. But there was no change in compensation or benefits. They weren't demoted under any of the policies in place. And yet the Fifth Circuit said there was an issue of tribal fact there. And that was an adverse personnel action. So where do we draw the line?
Well, I think that the court in formulating the objective standard might draw from federal jurisprudence that is growing up under this test, where they look at things in addition to pay, for example, prestige. Is the move from one job duty to another one that would visit a significant impact of prestige? Another would be, does the movement entail a reduced opportunity for advancement? Does the movement remove a job function that the employee would need to stay current on in order to be able to do their job well? Is there a change in the difficulty of the work conditions? Things of this nature that don't necessarily affect pay but do visit a significant impact on the employee's duties. As far as the paint jobs are concerned, we do know the Whistleblower Act does define the term personnel action, and that doesn't involve the paint in the offices, but it does involve things such as employment evaluation. And is the court going to countenance whistleblower claims where the employee feels that I should have gotten exemplary evaluation rather than just simply exceeds expectations? I mean, it could be as picky as that, and we have a whistleblower case with significant defense costs that could otherwise have been applied to educate the school's
counsel
children.
In this case. Does this somehow come under personnel action because it affected his work assignment? As I understand the record, this was part of his work duties.
This would be a work assignment, and so by definition, it is a personnel action What the Whistleblower Act does not tell us is what is an adverse personnel action, and so we're asking the court to put judicial gloss on the word adverse. And we see that when the Whistleblower Act was amended in 95 to add the term adverse, there was a body of federal jurisprudence that were looking at adverse personnel action. So there was already dialogue in jurisprudence concerning what rose to the level of an adverse action. So I think the word adverse is an important word.
What was your second point? One was adverse requires an objective materiality standard. What's number two?
Our second point is our second point in our brief, which has to do with the target of the whistleblowing here, and that is an elected official. And the elected official is neither the employing governmental entity nor a public employee within the definition of the Act. Our contention is, in this case, the report of a violation of law by the commissioner was not a report of a violation by the entity. And there are a couple of ways that you can branch this out. You can look at it as a complaint of a violation of Title VII, but you have Chapter 21, you have Title VII, and you have the Stinnett case saying that if you want to bring a retaliation claim for reporting sexual harassment or those sorts of things, you've got to go through EEOC, and that the Whistleblower Act, which is the more general statute, is preempted. The other angle, which is the one that I saw in the Court of Appeals opinion, is it's a violation of criminal law, but it's not a violation of criminal law by the governmental entity. It's a violation of criminal law by the commissioner. And so you can't use the criminal statute to bootstrap yourself into a whistleblower claim against the entity. And here's our problem. The elected official is not someone who, like the appointed official, or the employee is subject to the entity's control. The Act exists to deter the entity from allowing retaliation to take place, and it creates a financial incentive on the part of the policymakers to make sure that people who retaliate are disciplined appropriately. But when you have an elected official, it's hard for the entity to be able to rein that person in. Well, you say, well, what's going to rein that person in? Well, you still have, you know, against the Whistleblower Act, the backdrop of federal 1983 law and claims for violation of First Amendment right that can be brought against the elected official in his individual capacity. And so that means that the entity might, and the taxpayers may not have to suffer for this elected official's malfeasance, but certainly he's subject to that kind of financial deterrence through federal law. That's our other concern.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
Mr. Charles Fry will present argument from the respondent.
Please, the court. This is a summary judgment case. That's the most important facet about this case today. All of the questions that we have about what a reasonable employee would see as an adverse personnel action, what a substantial change in job assignment, or what material effect this retaliation had on Lieutenant Park can be answered by a jury.
So would you agree with the standard that the United States Supreme Court set? A reasonable employee would have found the challenged action materially adverse?
I'd go farther than that, Justice. I would cite you to the Texas Municipal League brief in this case, where they suggest a rule or a definition of adverse personnel action. As someone who drafts jury charges, at least for part of my pay, I would like for someone to tell me what an adverse personnel action is, so that then I can argue to a jury that Montgomery County violated the whistleblower statute. The Texas Municipal League, and it pains me somewhat to say this, has put forth a very good definition based in part upon the Burlington cases that amicus counsel spoke about. But this court has an opportunity to say, what's an adverse personnel action?
Well, is it true that Deputy Park's compensation was not reduced, or at least there's no evidence?
I don't know, Justice Hecht, if it was or not.
Any evidence or claim of that?
He says in his affidavit responding to the summary judgment that he lost the ability to assign extra jobs to him.
But he's still eligible for extra jobs.
Eligible, yes.
He just may not get his first pick.
That's correct.
Why can't we say, as a matter of law, that's just not enough here on this record? I mean, that's the evidence that was before in response to the summary judgment motion.
Justice Medina, if we knew how much it was, then we could say it's not enough. If we don't know how much it is, how can we say it's not enough? We know that he lost 50% of the opportunity to assign extra jobs. We also know that extra jobs are covered by Montgomery County Sheriff's Office policy. They control the extra jobs.
Just to be sure, when you say 50%, because the constable and the sheriff were sharing the
That's
salary.
Correct, Justice. Okay. Yeah, they alternate months now. So I don't know if that's a lot or a little. I think a jury should be able to hear whether it's a lot or a little. I think a jury should be able to hear whether that's a material adverse personnel action in Lieutenant Park's case. The sheriff of Montgomery County at the time thought it was. The sheriff of Montgomery County said David Park could not be the convention security coordinator unless he comported with Montgomery County Sheriff's Office rules and procedures, which he did. He was appointed by the sheriff. I think a jury might also see that if someone is appointed by the sheriff and then removed, an obvious retaliation by the county commissioner's court, one or more of its members. I think that then there is an issue of whether or not, even under the municipal league's definition, that's a material adverse effect.
So you're suggesting, though, that, I mean, the argument made by your opponent is that this is going to expose public employers to spending a lot of time in the courthouse explaining their actions for employees who happen to have made some allegation that they may not be illegal, but they say they think it's illegal. Shouldn't there be some circumscription around how we deal with these people, or otherwise we're going to be in court all the time?
Justice, we're in the court all the time now. I don't know how we reduce that necessarily from frivolous lawsuits. You already have.
Well, we could just draw a line and say, look, your pay's not any worse, your conditions, your office, everything's the same. In fact, you have less to do now than you did before. How could it? We could draw the line there.
Well, that's not how the statute draws the line, Justice. The statute says that, and the Supreme Court, as amicus counsel argues, says, would a reasonable employee feel like that's an adverse effect? Now, the statute talks about promotion, job evaluation, work assignment. Which
well, reasonable for an objective point of view.
True.
For example, my son's a police officer. He works, so you talked about the midnight shift in the worst part of Fort Worth because he wants to get the experience because he wants to move up the promotion ladder faster. If for some reason he makes some complaint, say, and some reason the department says, well, we've decided we want to assign you to the daylight shift in the least crime-ridden part of Fort Worth. So he feels like, subjectively, that that's an adverse action because he doesn't have the opportunity for promotion that he thinks he should have. Now, that's subjective.
But understand.
For an ordinary person looking at that, say, so, well, that's great.
Unless an ordinary person sitting in a jury box among 12 or 11 others.
His father would think that would be great.
Well, I understand. When we retaliate against someone, Justice, we do so in the way that we think will hurt them the most. Now, you can retaliate against me by saying you'll never be able to watch Texas Tech basketball ever again.
Now, that could be a folks, relief. You know.
Reasonable folks might differ as to whether or not that's retaliation. But I think that the key in this case is David Park has a right, should have the right, to address a jury and tell them.
But you're also saying there's no room for summary judgment in these cases.
Did sound like you were arguing all of these cases where adverse personnel action is contested. Almost all should go to a jury.
Well, I have a bias in favor of jury trials, Justice. I will admit that. But I think that if we adopt the Municipal League's definition, which is on page 9 of their amicus brief, that is as close as we're going to get. We're never going to get to the perfect world where you deter frivolous lawsuits 100%. All you can do is have Rule 13 motions, and you can write bar review articles and things like that.
And you can have summary judgments.
We can have summary judgments. But I think that we have summary judgments with a clear rule of what an adverse personnel action is.
Well, now, it seems to me that what would be appropriate in a summary judgment context would be the governing employer argument. So could you address that?
Absolutely. In this context, Commissioner Reinhart, well, first let me start this way. I disagree with amicus counsel that the act exists to deter an entity's wrongdoing. The Whistleblower Act exists to protect employees, public employees, who report in good faith wrongdoing. That's why the act exists. I don't know if it deters county commissioners, school board members. I have no idea. I do know that the Whistleblower Act is designed not with them in mind, but with the employees who bring their misconduct to light. In this case, Commissioner Reinhart is a public official. He is not appointed. He is elected. He is part of the governmental entity. Now, it's true the governmental entity did not, quote-unquote, retaliate against David Park, because no governmental entity acts, just like corporations don't act, except through people. So when the county judge and the county commissioner go to the director of the Convention Bureau and say, we want you to change this, knowing that David Park will be adversely impacted, that's the governmental entity acting, because David Park gets paid by the county. Even though he works for the sheriff, he gets paid by the county.
Is there evidence of that?
Not in this record, Your Honor. There is evidence that David Park is employed, of course, by the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office. So the governmental entity involved is Montgomery County. It acted through Commissioner Reinhart, the Convention Center director, and through, we think, we've alleged, the county judge. So when we look at this, if David Park had a good faith belief that he was reporting misconduct, unlawful conduct, to the appropriate person, the sheriff, then he gets over that hurdle, that initial hurdle, which was brought up in the Needham case in Wichita County versus Hart.
I'm reading the Municipal League's brief on page 13, as you said, and
page nine.
Okay, I have the same question. What is materially adverse?
An objective and material has, well, yeah, I think you go back to the Act. The Act says, does it affect your pay? Does it affect your job evaluation? Does it affect your work assignment?
Which one of those do you say was affected?
Work assignment and pay. Now, the pay is a little tricky, and let me take that up now. He did not get paid for extra jobs by Montgomery County. That's clear. But the county sheriff controls, through their extra job policy, which is in the record, what kind of extra jobs he can take.
But there's a huge step from controls your pay from the county and controls your pay from somewhere else. But, I mean, Judge Green's example could control your future pay from the employer, or, you know, employees could make the argument that, you know, anything you do to decrease my experience now as a judge means I can't get on with as good a law firm someday when I'm when I quit. Those kinds of connections are going to apply to everything. It's no longer an adverse personnel action. It's just anything adverse.
I would pull out of my brief book, Your Honor, the hundreds of cases on speculative damages. You attack it that way, not whether or not it's material. I think in this case, going back to the original question, Montgomery County Sheriff's Office has certain rules about extra jobs. You can only have, for example, you can't work at disreputable locations, things like that. Now, if David Park had been retaliated against in a different way, if they had said, David, you're the only Montgomery County Sheriff's Officer who can't work extra jobs, well, the county's argument is the same. We didn't reduce his pay at the county. We didn't affect his pay, his promotion. We affected nothing at
the county. Well, but in your scenario, that would be the sheriff making that decision. I mean, the problem I have here is this county commissioner does not have any power or authority to force the sheriff to do anything. He went out and did this unilaterally. And retaliatory though it may have been, there's no ability for the sheriff's department to rein in the... It seems like fundamental to the Whistleblower Act is there must be some ability to rein in the abuser. And here, you know, somebody else gets word of it. And what if it was, you know, a cousin who at the, you know...
I think that's exactly right. I think that if the county had gone to a third-party employer, so to speak, a vendor at the convention center and said, don't hire that David Park guy, he's a troublemaker, we wouldn't have a whistleblower case. That's true. There's no doubt about that. But the county didn't do that. The county didn't go to his cousin or to a vendor. The county itself said, you are now 50% less responsible for security coordination, ergo 50% less able to be appointed, so to speak, to these independent vendors. So you're right, Justice, that the county, if it went to someone else, and that pay is totally outside the county, but the county controls extra jobs. The county controlled this extra job. The only reason he got it, according to Sheriff Williams in his affidavit, is because he was an officer in the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office. So you have to be a law enforcement officer in Montgomery County to hold that position. So it's integral, I think, as part of his work assignment and part of the compensation that is part of the what's a good word, penumbra of being a law enforcement officer.
You agree with opposing counsel that the standard, he's argued, should be an objective one? That's what the page 9 of the brief you refer to says.
It has to be objective at some point, Justice, so I do. I do think that this is a good definition for the Municipal League. I think it would make an excellent jury instruction for this case, because I think this case should go to a jury.
Do you think there could ever be a case that should go to a jury because the color of a person's office was changed?
No.
Never?
I don't, no.
Even fuchsia wouldn't get your dander up.
Justice, I confess, I have never known what fuchsia is.
You'll know it if you see it, probably.
Well, let me make sure I understand something you said earlier. I understand you agree with the Supreme Court's pronouncement in Burlington Northern. A reasonable employee would have found the challenged action materially adverse. And you responded, I'd go even further. And I didn't catch where you'd go even further.
Just to the Municipal League's definition of adverse personnel action. I think it's more than just a standard. I think that they've drafted an instruction, basically, on page 9 of their brief that describes what an adverse personnel action is. Now, we confuse these together, and I think judges at the trial court level do this a lot, and I think that when we write jury instructions, we have to do this a lot. But clearly, I think if we ask a jury, do you think, as a reasonable person, David Park was materially adversely affected in his position as a lieutenant with the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office, then that, if that's a question, when this case is submitted after oral argument, if that's still a question, then it's a fact question. And this is a summary judgment case.
Okay. And this is a traditional summary judgment, right?
Yes.
So they had the burden to disprove all these things.
Please.
All right, now, secondly, let me go back to your jury question. Should the standard be a reasonable person standard, or should it be a reasonable lieutenant in the police department standard? I mean, where do we go with that?
Just like in car wrecks, Your Honor, I think in a car wreck case, you don't ask if a reasonable truck driver or a reasonable pickup driver or a reasonable teenage driver, a reasonable person.
Yeah, but how about a police officer, Justice Green's asking about? There's sometimes a different community there. They act differently. They think differently. They have different. They're not necessarily the same as a reasonable person in all cases, are they?
I think that's true, Justice Johnson. And what happens then is, at trial in front of the jury, you show the differences. You show why this.
But the question goes to the instruction: is it a reasonable person? I'm not disagreeing. It would be objective, but is it going to be? How are we going to instruct the jury, reasonable person or a reasonable person similarly situated as to the plaintiff?
I don't have a good answer to that because I haven't thought it through, Justice Johnson. I would stick with reasonable person standard and then depend upon the litigants to educate a jury on what that meant under the facts of their case. To tell you the truth, that's how I would handle it. I would bring in other police officers to testify about what it means to have your shift changed, what it means to be sent to the Highlands Mall at noon every day, what it means to have to go be a jailer. Because I think, as I said before, when you retaliate against someone, you pick the way you can hurt them the worst. That's different for all of us.
But whatever we do, it's still objective.
I think it has to be at some point, Justice Johnson. But I do adopt and the Municipal League's, what I call the instruction, that even as a trial lawyer, I will tell you, we need some guidance under the Whistleblower Act as to what an adverse personnel action
couldn't
is.
We say this is, this sort of action is so trivial that even as a matter of law, an objective employee would not be deterred from reporting a violation of the law if, as a consequence, all that they face is having to apply for this position rather than assigning myself to that position. Couldn't that be a legal determination?
Well, and I think it is, Chief Justice. That is one of the legal determinations in this case. I happen to be honored and privileged to argue in favor of Lieutenant Park that this is not the kind of triviality that would fit that test. It's not even close. When the county commissioner and the county judge remove you from a publicly visible position, and when they affect you and no one else in the department in your ability to earn extra jobs or extra job pay from third-party vendors, when they do that to you, it's not trivial.
How much time did this security coordinator work assignment take?
Sheriff Williams, in his affidavit, and David Park indicated that it took just a few minutes a day, at most, a few minutes a week, to coordinate assignments.
What does a few mean?
I don't know, Justice. I don't know. I can't tell you. In our view, that's beside the point. The point is not whether or not it was done as part of his regular duty during the day. The point is that it was a it had the imprimatur of the county, so to speak. He was put there by the county and removed by the county. That's the important part. So,
and that in itself carries some prestige, as I understand it, with my fellow friends that are police officers, and that the extra job assignments can be, you know, you can work at a nice place, a horrible place, someone's paying $10 an hour versus $75 an hour, so it is a significant impact, I guess, as you said, to the individual, perhaps to be cited by some other evidence.
And Justice Medina, if that's a question, then that's a jury question. And David Park deserves the right to prove his case, or to at least try to prove his case.
But every time a lawsuit is filed, it's because the person claims that the action was not trivial.
And?
But you just acknowledged a few minutes ago that all of these cases don't raise a fact question suitable for trial. So, again, in every lawsuit, they went to the time and trouble, paid the filing fee to file it, generally, because they believe it's not trivial. All of those cases raise the fact question that survived summary judgment, counsel?
Your Honor, I have to defer to the Chief Justice when he said that there is a legal question, which I think is a very low threshold, honestly, or should be a very low threshold. My bias is in favor of jury trials. I think everyone who practices law should be biased in favor of jury trials.
Assume we agree. Jury trials are good. Still, every case doesn't go to trial.
That's correct.
What falls below the threshold?
You said trivial. Well, statute talks about objective, or the instruction you've called it in the brief says objectively and materially adverse.
Right.
Okay, we're not just deciding your case. We're trying to also set out some guidance in terms of a principle or rule that can apply to many cases in a huge state. If you were king, what's your standard? Which ones lose on summary judgment? Which ones get to go to trial?
My standard would be that A, it goes through the reasonable person prism. That first, you know, you must be able to tell that a reasonable person in that situation would be adversely affected. Objectively, in that, it affects, as the statute said, it affects your performance, your job performance, your evaluation. Now, if you're asking me, is there a quantitative bar that I can set? I apologize, I cannot. If you're asking me whether or not trial court judges should still have the power to filter cases through what the Chief Justice pointed to as trivialities, perhaps, then yes, I would preserve that, of course. No one likes frivolous lawsuits.
And when it comes to affecting your work assignment, what would fall below the threshold?
I think that the amicus counsel, what would fall below the threshold?
What would not go to trial?
That's a good question, Chief or Justice. I think the point would be that we could follow, as amicus counsel said, what the federal courts have been developing. Burlington Northern case, for example, the sexual harassment cases, the hostile work environment cases. I think those are excellent cases to give us some, quote, objective, end quote, standards, but still allow the development of facts. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I proceed?
Yes.
Counsel, are you contesting that this was a personnel action?
We do contest it was a personnel action.
Your position is it did not affect his work assignment?
Did not affect his work assignment. And here's the evidence, Your Honor. Again,
adverse. I'm apart from adverse. Adverse on one side, personnel action on the other.
Arguably, it wasn't even a personnel action taken towards him. The sheriff was his employer. The sheriff set his assignments. The sheriff determined who got hired.
The question I'm going to is this. Personnel action is defined by the statute, is it not, and includes a work assignment.
It does include work
assignment. And was this part of his work assignment was this part of his work assignment to make these assignments? I understood it was.
Did the sheriff decide what his work assignment was?
No,
yes.
No. Was this assigned to him as part of his duties?
The sheriff designated him to perform this function, yes, during his regular work hours.
Okay. And then they changed it. So that's what I was understanding amicus counsel to say. They're not disputing is a personnel action. The question is adverse.
That's right. That goes to the heart of it. The question is, and how do you determine whether something is adverse? You look at its effect on the person.
You're in the same place he is, then. Right. We're on adverse, not personnel action.
We are on adverse. If you look at the Whistleblowers Act, there's a gloss on adverse. What the Whistleblowers Act says is that what it applies to is suspensions, terminations, suspensions, or other adverse personnel actions. So the legislature's already clued in that they're talking about serious actions. A suspension without pay or a termination is a serious personnel action. But they also define personnel action to include things like work assignment, and certainly compensation. No one's going to argue that any significant reduction in compensation is adverse to the employee's interest. But in this case, we got to look. The summary judgment evidence was undisputed. Yes, it was on summary judgment, but the evidence was undisputed. Here was the effect on David Park. He had removed from him duties that took him 5 minutes or less a week, which involved sitting in his office, picking up the phone, and calling off-duty deputies and saying, hey, do you want to work security at the convention center? He wasn't sent to the graveyard shift. He wasn't given some undesirable duty. He simply had removed a responsibility that he had. So he had 5 minutes more a week. He could work on supervising.
What does the record show, 5 minutes or less a week?
It may say a few minutes rather than 5 minutes.
Okay. We'll find it.
It's cited in the brief. There's a record cite to that in the brief. I'm sorry. I can't.
Does it matter how long it took? I mean, can't you also associate whatever that job duty is with the perception of power or prestige?
Well, that wasn't the plaintiff did not
bring
make that
forward.
Argument in this case. The case that the Chief Justice was talking about is an example of significant. You take the guy's got, if David Park is over patrol and they send him back to the jail, which actually he was before he became a patrol deputy, that might be an undesirable. That's changing his entire job. Instead of being supervising patrol officers, you're having to deal with all of the issues of the jail. That's not the case here. They took away from him 5 minutes worth of calling somebody on the phone.
But you don't question that it was, in fact, retaliatory.
I don't question the fact that that's the allegation, and this is on summary judgment, so we have to take the allegation as true that it was retaliatory. So for your purposes, you have to assume it was retaliatory.
How do you feel about the Texas Municipal League's setting out of the standard it likes on page 9 of its brief?
I think that's an appropriate standard, and I think if that standard is applied to this case, any reasonable standard is applied to this case, that this is an action, action that was taken was not significant enough, was not material enough.
If we adopt a standard that opposing sides each think they went under, that's not much of a standard, doesn't seem like to me.
Clearly, we need a standard, and for all the reasons that have been stated in the briefs.
Let me ask you this. I take it you share the amicus's concern about the commissioner being a public employee.
I do. But
why shouldn't the taxpayers pay for an elected official's misconduct, the discrimination against an employee for reporting that? Versus a manager or somebody lower in the organization?
I think one of the points that was made by Mr. Viotta is that the organization has control over who the manager is. Commissioner's Court, which is the policy-making body for the county, can't do much of anything about what an individual commissioner does, whether he's out sexually harassing employees as alleged here or going over and trying to persuade some county official to take some kind of action, persuade him rather than order him. They can't do anything about that. But if it's a manager, if it's an employee of the county, they can fire him or they can take disciplinary action against him if he's taking inappropriate action. So they have control. As to elected officials, there are other remedies out there. For instance, in this particular case, based on the claims that were made, retaliation, they could have brought an action under Title VII against the commissioner in the county, but for whatever reason they did not. The question here, though, is it's a whistleblower's case. Was it material, judged objectively, and we think the summary judgment evidence demonstrated that it was not.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Hightower. That concludes the argument. That cause is submitted, as are all causes this morning, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.